This is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Lori Elster, and this is the All Access Star Trek podcast. Today, because Discovery Season 5, the final season, is just a couple of weeks away, so we are going to be talking about what the Discovery cast and producers had to say at South by Southwest. We had a man on the scene.
Indeed.
So we're going to play you some of that audio, but we're going to go through news first. There's been a lot of news out of South by Southwest and Star Trek San Francisco and just life. So let's start with the Starfleet Academy show, which we finally have a tiny bit of information on.
This is not a huge surprise. So they're going to be filming in the late summer. So originally it was going to be early 2024 shooting, but the strikes pushed everything. They're still writing. But then because of that, the ripple effect is the show may not arrive until 2026. According to Alex Kurtzman in an interview at South by Southwest.
He talked a lot about extended post time that is needed for a show like that, which is why it's going to take a while.
Yeah, up to 8 months.
What he said that was interesting, because I guess the interviewer must have been talking about Tawny Newsome on the writing team. And he said that to some degree, in some ways, and don't take this to the extreme, my listeners, my friends. but he said the spirit of Lower Decks has migrated into Starfleet Academy in some ways. And my interpretation of that is that there is going to be sort of some that more humor and maybe a quickness to it, I'm going to guess. But he's not saying it's a parody. It's not going to be filled with little Easter eggs and what, you know what I mean? Like,
Tawny has said exactly that. You know, she has said it's not that when she's talked about the show.
Right, right. But he's saying there is some tone of it, which is interesting. And also he was asked if the show will be following, like, will it be following sort of the academic year and having, are we following one class all the way through? Or are we seeing new students arrive each season? Presuming there are multiple seasons. And he said the show will allow for both of those things.
And of course, there's adult characters who are faculty and they'll carry over.
The funny thing is, so, I mean, he was asked, you know, what time period it takes place in, and he didn't want to say. But in the meantime, like, all the actors have totally spilled the beans, because when you ask any of the Discovery actors, like, do you think you might show up on Starfleet Academy? They're all like, yeah, I do. I hope so. I think it makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know why they're being weird about that. You know, so Academy's in 2026. There we go. That's, yeah. Well, I mean, not for sure, but
I'm going to guess he's the one who said it. He'd know. So,
but that brings up a kind of another ripple effect, which is that I'm betting Strange New Worlds is 2025. They could probably, I think Section 31 finished filming this week. So,
yeah, I think so.
They could squeeze that in by the end of this year, and we're going to get Lower Decks by the end of this year. And of course, Prodigy sometime, but we don't know when. 2025 is a big question mark. You know, we don't know. They have yet to announce a single, unless you count Strange New Worlds moving to next year, there is no content for 2025.
Right, but there will be.
I'm not saying there won't be, but Paramount is short on cash, but we don't know how much.
Well, they're even shorter on announcements.
Yeah, exactly.
But these things are moving forward and happening. Well, looking back a little instead of forward.
Yeah.
Some shows that have aired. The 4th annual Critics' Choice Super Awards, which are all about genre fiction, like superhero stuff, science fiction, fantasy, horror, action, have nominated Star Trek between Picard and Strange New Worlds for 8 awards.
That's a lot. It's kind of like, I mean, this is kind of like the Saturn Awards, which had a bunch of Star Trek nominations. In one category, there's 3 Star Trek people in it, I think, because it's they do things a little differently. So it's not like lead actor. I think it's just like any actor.
It's just best actor in a science fiction fantasy series. I mean, or limited movie, blah, 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 blah. But and so it's Patrick Stewart, Todd Stashwick, and Anson Mount are all nominated.
Against some, you know, a few other guys. So it's like half Star Trek.
Kurt Russell is one of the other guys.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. That is an interesting category. And then what's fun in terms of best actress is that you have Jeri Ryan, Celia Rose Gooding, and then for a completely different series, Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Amanda Plummer's nominated for Best Villain, which is fun.
So there's a lot of Trekness in the Super Awards this year.
Yep.
There's more Picard stuff from this extended chat that Terry did with what's called the Master Replicas Collectors Club. And he got pretty honest. So some of the interesting stuff, he kind of covered his whole life with Star Trek, which people forget it actually started in season two of Picard. He was basically there at the beginning where he's like, let's do time travel, let's do Q. And they're like, sure, let's do that to save money. And he liked Q. And he talked about how, you know, COVID and network pressure forced them to do lots of changes on that show. And there were some more radical ideas for season two, like Guinan's Bar was supposed to be kind of like that scene in Men in Black where, you know, there's all these aliens hanging around in the back where no one could see them.
Right. Like you'd go through the phone booth to the back room and then there's a whole bunch of aliens who are trying to not to interfere with
Earth. Right. Because this would be 2024 Los Angeles. So right. That kind of upends First Contact, because if Guinan's Bar has been chock full of aliens for centuries, you know, there's been plenty of First Contacts, but no one's noticed.
Sure.
Because it's all secret, because they all knew the password. But no, it could have been fun. And there was supposedly some Romulan subplot and the network said it's too complicated, whatever. And so they had to rewrite the season. And we got what we got, you know, and he even acknowledged, like, you could tell there were different ideas at play with season two, which was his way of saying it's convoluted. And it was.
Yeah, I would call it a hot mess myself, but because it really
had some great stuff.
The things just
episode
didn't connect.
Episode two was great.
No, it had moments, but it didn't really ever come together. You can tell that things were also changing on the fly, as much as you can change things on the fly in production, so that when he was off doing planning season three, things were changing in season two.
Right, like the whole Borg storyline. They were working on season three. Well, that was evolving, and it wasn't, from his point of view, properly explained how there were different Borg. And then they almost considered bringing the Jurati Borg into season three even. But it wasn't really always like people thought the thing at the end with them was to set them up for season three. That was really not the plan, apparently. But then they did kind of think about it. But then they're like, well, it's too expensive to bring her in. And
yeah, they said she wasn't available. It was too expensive to make this whole new Borg collective and shoot all those scenes. And then at the bottom line, he said, like, they didn't want to take away from the idea that, like, Seven and the TNG gang have to save the day. So if they bring in these other people, then it almost takes away from the momentum of that story. And then he also said they thought about, there was a whole scene where they were going to explain that, just so that, you know, and for that it was a different sort of group of, a different collective. And they had this whole scene, and then they realized, like, we're just stopping what we're doing to describe what happened.
Well, it sounds like they shot the scene.
That's not what
sounds like there was some exposition from Riker while he was on the Enterprise D talking about it. It could have been clearer for sure. I think most people got it. Some people didn't.
I think it's the opposite. I think some people got it. Most people didn't.
That's true. I don't know. You know,
I just think the pressure of doing the two seasons back to back, which he said was really difficult.
Yeah.
And then the pressure.
The cost savings, COVID, that shut them down for at least a week, and the rewriting and back to back, and something had to give. And that was definitely season two. Season two suffered.
Well, because he also said during the phase of COVID then was if one person tested positive, you shut down production.
Yeah.
So they lost time on that. And then he had plans for season three, some of which I think he talked about with us when we had him on. Like, I remember him talking about Naomi Wildman.
He got a little more detail about what that was like and basically said if we had 13 episodes, we would have done it. But with 10, you don't. And it would have been this kind of dark, you know, Naomi Wildman. I mean, I kind of like the idea. I think it would have been an interesting way of. Because if you think about how Seven was introduced with that Ichab scene and everything, this would be in a way the opposite of that. Because you'd have Seven realizing that she's gone down this dark path, and it took seeing Naomi going bad, as it were, being too hardcore for her to realize, like, wait, I've gone too far. I've become too cynical or whatever.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that. But they said it's just too much to squeeze in. I mean, he also wanted Harry Kim in the show, but then Prodigy was already doing so much Voyager stuff, and they were afraid that they would step on that because they didn't. Poor Garrett, I'm sure, is still like, could somebody call?
I'm pretty sure, they went down that. I think there was phone calls. I think they had gone down the line. Didn't Garrett meant talk about that?
I don't remember.
I mean, he wanted a quote, like an Avengers Endgame thing for the fleet day where, you know, everyone's there. And sure, that would have been fun, but I think we had enough in season three.
Yeah, like he was like, Major Kira is on, she's got her ship and she's on the bridge and we just see her for a minute, but there she is. Like, it would have been something that thrilled everybody, but the amount of money it would have taken to do all that stuff just for the nifty payoff is a good, you know, question.
Yeah. The one thing that I'm not sure I agree with him is the Janeway thing. It seems to me that they were building up to Janeway appearing at the end of the season.
Well, they talked about her a lot.
And it would have been a beautiful moment for Janeway to give Seven her captain's, you know, pips. They did it with Tuvok. It would have made more sense logically to have it with Janeway. Terry kind of explained it away of like, it would have been, you know, it would have been too much. Not just, and literally too much, meaning they couldn't afford it. Here's a funny thing that he said, not during this talk, but in San Francisco. The budget for season three was less than the budget for season two, which was less than the budget for season one.
I wish I could pluck some of that money from those other seasons. Yeah, I would have liked it. And I think a lot of us really want to see Janeway and Seven together again, especially like you think about the real life situation of like the actress, you know, Jerry Ryan had a rough time on Voyager. Kate was not nice to her. They've made up for it over the years. They're good. When they see each other, it's always warm and lovely. And so I think that would have been nice on that level as well for the fans to see.
There was a little talk about legacy, of course, and he made it super clear it's not happening. He said, they know where to find me.
Poor guy just keeps getting asked the same question and has to keep giving the same answer. I'd love to. I want to. They have my number. Nobody's doing anything yet.
Legacy keeps on coming up, but he acknowledges like, look, they're making all this other stuff now. He knows that they don't have the money to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so he's not bitter about it.
No. And I think also like he has plenty of career opportunities.
Yeah, he did say he's taking meetings. He's doing he had to make it clear. Yeah. These other things I can't talk about aren't Star Trek. They're not Legacy. It's not like Legacy is happening in secret, which
people still think it is. People are still talking about it, but yeah, it's not. You know, it has, he was already doing fine, but definitely it's opened up even more doors for him because there are a lot of Star Trek fans out there who are at studios or running production companies and doing different things. So he will do fine and hopefully he gets his Star Trek.
I mean,
he was
just on the podcast with Feige and Feige was talking about Picard season three glowingly. So Kevin Feige's a fan and if you want to have a fan in Hollywood.
That's a good one to have. Yeah. I love that he's a big Star Trek fan. Well, so before we get into you describe, because I want you to talk about being at the San Francisco convention. But first, just to sort of explain what's going on with Creation is that they're planning to bring back regional conventions. So they always do the big one in Vegas, which we all go to. But they want to do sort of slightly more intimate ones in different cities. And this was one of them, San Francisco. They're looking at Chicago, although they had a date plan that they've had to change. So they're working on that. But their plan is to have, in addition to panels and the usual stuff, like events with celebrities, sort of like the cruise, like, oh, you can do karaoke with these celebrities or wine tasting with those celebrities and things like that.
It's nothing new. You know, if you're older than 30, you probably remember that they used to do this all the time. I mean, back in the day, they do dozens across the country every year. Now he wants to do about a dozen a year, which is how many they do for Supernatural, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe it. That show's huge. But it's one show.
So this year we'll have three if you count Vegas, and then they're hoping for more next year and to build up to 12. I went to a few of these regional things back in the day, and so going to San Francisco was reminiscent of that. It was smaller, it was intimate, but it was still pretty well attended. There was a good selection of celebrities, maybe third of what you'd get in Vegas. There was 30-something. Vegas is like over 100 guests. And Bonnie Gordon was and Ryan Husk from The Seventh Rule were great co-hosts. Bonnie did a lot of singing, random singing. She's, you know, just, and there were fun little moments. Like she'd come out to sing Happy Birthday to Jonathan DeLarco, or and she wrote a song just for the event. And, you know, she's kind of ham. Like she...
She's a great addition to the Star Trek group because she's a big ham. She loves to sing. She loves to perform. She loves all Star Trek. And she's just a lot of fun. She's just a really warm, fun person.
You know, we've done a few articles already. There's kind of, you know, semi-newsy stuff coming out of Lower Decks panel. And Picardo talked about being on Prodigy. Like you said, the writers understood that the Doctor isn't just comic relief. So it sounds like there is a lot of comic relief Doctor stuff on Prodigy season 2, but that he gets serious like he would on Voyager 2, which is no surprise. Yep. We know that writer's room is deeply embedded in Star Trek and Voyager lore.
Yeah, I wouldn't even worry, but maybe he didn't know that.
Right.
But
it's like that. An animated thing. And so, then he's reading this like, wow, these guys actually they.
Yeah. These guys watched my show.
Surprise.
I mean, the other thing he said that I thought was interesting was someone was saying, when's it going to go up? And he was like, well, I don't know. And he doesn't have inside information, but he seemed to think May.
He said May. I don't know why he said it.
He said May. And I don't think someone said it's going to be in May, but don't tell anyone. But what I do think is that somewhere he did hear May.
So there were these fun moments. I got video, you know, if you're following on our social, like I saw Ethan Phillips lining up in the, you know, fan Q&A line. So I went over and I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm going to ask a question. And so I got a video of him asking Terry Metalis a question, because Terry was a PA on Voyager. They knew each other well.
Yeah.
And he asked, like, you know, why is Neelix your favorite character? And then Terry announced, I can now announce we're going to make Star Trek Neelix. And he ran up and they hugged each other. It was cute. And and then Terry and Todd did the same thing to Jerry and Michelle, where they went up and Todd like asked when, you know, about legacy or something. And, you know, Gates McFadden crashed the Lower Decks panel. Gates is a big fan of all the.
She is. And I think she and Tawny have bonded couple times, so they get along really well. That's so fun. I mean, that's the kind of stuff people want to see. That's what creates memorable moments.
And there were, you know, and there were things outside of the panels. There was this, apparently I didn't even know this was in Vegas last year. Apparently this was in Vegas, but no one noticed. But there was a craft room. Did you know about this?
Yes.
Okay, well, see, I didn't know about this, but I found the craft room where you could pay like $25 and it's like you're a kid again, and you make, you know, you could paint little Star Trek paintings, or you could make Star Trek bracelets, and there was a green screen where you could do fun stuff, and it was cute. And the bar was hopping afterwards, so.
Oh, I bet. Well, also the whole Seventh Rule, you know, gang was there, and those guys are so much fun to hang around with, and they know so many people, so I would imagine that they were a big part of the social
they were. I life. Hung out with those folks, with Ryan and Anne Marie and
Melissa,
and the rest of the gang. Oh, and Sirach, of course, is very cool. Yeah, and you notice like you know, there's John Delancey at the, you know, he's having dinner there. It's very insular. It is like the cruise, because it was all in one hotel. And because in Vegas, a lot of the celebrities, I think most of the celebrities don't stay at the Rio,
right? For many reasons.
Well, although if you read my article on creation, it also talks about the improvements to the Rio. And I think all of us agree the Rio is problematic, but it's now part of the World of Hyatt, and they're spending $35 million. I forget what the number is, but millions of dollars And they've redone the pool and the lobby and one of the towers. And
I think they're adding more food options too, right?
There's a new,
because that was one of the biggest problems.
Yeah, and like some cool stuff I've seen they're making this bar that looks like this bar in Rio de Janeiro, and it's going to be better, much better. So anyway, keep track of more articles from San Francisco coming out, but I'm looking forward to more of these regional events. I'll probably go to the next one if it's in Chicago or wherever it is, and check that out.
I hope they do one in New York, New Jersey. That would be great.
Yeah, they used to do one there fairly regularly. So, yeah, I'm sure they will.
So earlier this week, Discovery made a big splash, I like to say, at South by Southwest. They showed everybody the first episode. They had a big panel, and they did a red carpet. So people got to see it. They got to hear what everybody had to say about it. And then we sent Joe, our lovely Joe Andoska, was on the red carpet talking to anyone he could get from Star Trek. And he got a lot of excellent people. So I think we should start by listening to his interview with the lovely and talented Sonequa Martin-Green.
The first question I had is, you've had a chance to explore so many different sides of Michael Burnham to really evolve the character in a meaningful way. So as an actress who's also a producer, how did you ask to explore anything new this season that you hadn't had a chance to explore as an actress before?
You know, I didn't have to ask to explore anything, because what we do, where we go and what we do is beyond what I thought could ever happen on this show. And I wish I could say more, but it would spoil it, but yes, I mean, I was able to be a lot more involved in the post-process this time around as well, especially now being an executive producer for season 5. So I feel like we did everything I could have dreamed of.
That's awesome. Great.
Yeah.
So you've talked about a big thing in season 5?
Yes.
Can you tell us what that is? Where it's where to look for it? Is it a person, place, or thing? Is it bigger than Redbox? Play 20 questions.
Let me see. What can I tell you? Person, place, or thing? Let's see. I'll tell you it's all three.
Okay.
I'll tell you it's all three.
Okay.
And it's all across the whole season.
Okay.
That's what I got with that.
Okay. All right. Something else that you've also said is that you would be up for doing a Trek crossover.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at the current shows, do you have a preference? Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, Prodigy?
Oh, my goodness. And there's even the Section 31 movie.
And
you know,
Section
well,
31. Well,
we're limited in our timeline, right?
Yep.
So all of those that you just mentioned, we wouldn't really be able to do, scientifically speaking, because we're in the 3190, early 90s now.
Almost time travel.
But yes, I think that we would be down. I would, and I think I can speak for us all. We would be down for any of them. We're proud of all of our children from the mothership of this new Latinum age of Trek. That's what we've heard fans say.
Or something new.
Yes.
Like the Academy show.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Okay. That could be wonderful. A movie even. Like, that would be so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting the high side.
Okay.
So thank you very
much. Thank you.
Yeah.
So the teasing of this big thing continues. I don't think we got anything out of her on that one. But yeah. She sounds like she's way into returning. I thought what was interesting is when he didn't even ask, and she's like, I want to do a movie, which of course anyone does, but you know, she's put some thought into this, I guess is my point.
Well, it's been a great role for her. She's gotten to do so much in the last 5 seasons with that character.
If you remember like 3 or 4 years ago, you know, the trades reported that one of the Discovery writers who had left had pitched a movie to Paramount, and, you know, they threw it in the hopper and it was in there. It wasn't necessarily related to Discovery, but it was a Discovery writer. So do you remember this?
No.
So I'm not saying it's happening, but it's not too crazy of a notion. And again, she seems to be confirming like there's no way. It would be very difficult for me to show up in those other shows, except for Academy. That seems to work. Hint, hint.
She said, or the Section 31 movie.
Which makes no sense, because it was like literally wrapping up filming that, you know, the day after she said this. So.
Right. But she might not have known that.
That's a good point.
She was in South by Southwest for 2 different things. She was in a movie and she was doing that. So she's been busy.
Let's move on to the two showrunners. Let's start with Michelle Paradise.
Sure.
Season 5 is a different tone.
Yes.
Okay? And it's a bit more episodic,
yes,
from what I'm hearing.
Yep.
And the structure and more connections to Trek lore.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe.
Maybe.
Would you say that this season's been influenced by recent seasons of Picard, Changing Worlds, and Prodigy? And if so, how?
No. I mean, it's still fundamentally Discovery. We still, you know, Discovery is built on serialized storytelling, so we still have that. Really, the shift in tone for this season was we came into this season. Season 4 had a bit of a heavier tone in general. It was written and shot during a time of COVID, and you know, we kind of knew coming into season 5 that we wanted that different tone. We wanted a bit more action, adventure, a bit more lightness, not to lose the things that make Discovery Discovery. So really, it was a matter of thinking, well, what does that look like? And you know, we're sending our heroes on a quest, and so the nature of a quest allows for a bit more of the episodic storytelling, but again, it's Discovery, so we don't lose the serialized stuff.
I wanted to ask about Rayner's backstory.
Okay.
Is he Vulcan, Romulan?
He's Kelleran. Else?
He's what?
Kelleran.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. All right, because we were curious about that.
That's, yeah, we were looking for a species that not a lot had been done with them.
Yeah.
We definitely wanted another non-human on board the ship and heading, you know, and taking care of things. So Kelleran was one that had not been explored a whole lot, so we were able to also build some backstory for him and for his planet that we'll come to learn more about later.
Okay. And just one other question about,
sure.
Would it be fair to call the additional footage shot for the finale as sort of an epilogue? And were there any changes to the original finale, or is this something that was added on?
It's more, I would say it's probably more of the latter. What's really interesting about this season is when we came in, of course, we didn't know that it would be our last season.
Yeah.
But as with every season of Discovery, we explore big themes, big ideas. As you know from having seen the first episode, this season is a lot about meaning and purpose. And we got to the end. We had finished shooting. Sorry. We had finished shooting, and then we found out it was our... it's because of me. I'm talking a long time. I'll wrap it up. We actually felt like of all the seasons for it to happen, this was the best one, if you will, because the themes are all so big. So when we got to the end and got to shoot some additional material, no, we didn't have to change anything from the season. That is all what we shot. You know, we made maybe a couple of tweaks for the finale that we ended up shifting just some things around, but it was very minor, very minor. So, I do think that people coming into the season and not knowing that will feel very satisfied and like we had known going in. So that's kind of cool.
Great. Awesome.
And thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Thank you.
So I had been describing Rayner as either a Vulcan or a Romulan, but he's not, which is why, I mean, we asked that question because we started figuring out we don't think he is.
Well, because one, he didn't act like one, and two, his ears are different.
Yeah, and you can see that when we'll get into this later, but Laurie and I have seen the early episodes. So he's a Kelleran, and if you haven't heard or remember that, it's from a single episode of DS9 called Armageddon Game, you know, from the second season. I think that's basically it about them. They're kind of a blank slate. They were involved with the Harvester weapon. I mean, it's, you know, it's, they're a one-off single episode species, basically.
I like that episode.
Sure, sure.
But I liked it because of Miles O'Brien and Julian Bashir.
I don't know if any of this backstory or the episode will play into the season.
No, but maybe it shapes who he is, and we'll get him to tell, you know, he'll bring up, well, when my people used to fight with the Harvesters or whatever.
Yeah, they may throw that in. Why not? You know, and, you know, I like what you had to say about the epilogue. Essentially, they didn't change the season at all.
Right. A little
tiny,
bit,
tiny,
she
bit,
said.
Tiny
but
bit.
Yeah. No, and I also think what she said about COVID was interesting, because I think one day when people really look back at the show, at all the shows made during that time, it affected the mood of the content of those shows. Like, I remember they kept saying, like, it's about uncertainty, which was a frustrating thing to watch for 10 episodes. Because we're like, no, you're supposed to tell us something. But But I mean, that is what the writers were feeling. It actually is like legit artistic expression, if you think about it.
You could go through each season of this show and see what they're feeling. Season one was written during the 2016 campaign.
Clearly.
The opening scene of episode one was a political rally of Tacuvma.
Right.
This show has always tried to reflect what's happening around, you know, the writer's room.
And I think even when they don't try, I mean, they were trying, but a lot of times it just gets in there because that's what writing is. All right, well, let's listen to the interview that Joe did with Alex Kurtzman.
Okay, now that it's all coming to an end, what do you think or hope will be the enduring legacy of Discovery for the franchise and beyond?
I mean, I think there's two things. First, there would be no modern age of Star Trek without Discovery. Whether you loved it or you hated it, it kicked open the door for more Star Trek.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the idea was never to make one show that pleased everybody. It was to make a lot of shows that pleased individual segments of the fandom. Because as any fan knows, there is not one all-size-fits-all Star Trek fan. So I think the key for us was, you know, I didn't set out to build a Star Trek universe when we did Discovery, but that is, in fact, what happened. And I'm really, really proud of that. And I think fans will see that there, you know, there wouldn't be what exists now without it. The other thing is, obviously Roddenberry had an extraordinary track record for representation on screen. I mean, TOS set the bar, and I think we quadrupled down on it with the show. So I believe we're living very much in his shadow, and hopefully he'd be proud.
Thank you. That's great. The show seems to go through a change every season. How much is fan feedback a factor in driving?
Oh, it's always a factor. We listen to the fans a lot. You know, we talk about, we see what people are saying online. And we talk about what if it feels resonant, what if it feels truthful, what if it feels like, you know, you always know when someone makes a point, you kind of feel in your gut, oh, that's a very fair point. So we're always open to feedback. I think it's actually a really important part of making Trek Trek.
How much has the AR wall tech changed how Star Trek is made?
It's changed a lot. It changes like every 6 months. And we're even having conversations now about how to integrate it in Starfleet Academy slightly differently than what we've done on Strange and on Discovery and Section 31. So it's a huge tool. But like any digital tool, it needs to be used very thoughtfully. And I think that what I like more than anything is to create a world that feels grounded. And sometimes it can sort of make you feel like you're inside a video game. So we're really trying hard to make sure that's not the feeling.
I'm glad he acknowledges that they are paying attention. You know, he said online, they are listening to the fans. And fans have been vocal about this show. And every season...
Understatement.
Yeah, every season we've seen this, of how the show is course correcting, you know, giving the Klingons hair again, all sorts of stuff. They're saying, okay, you keep on complaining about canon. Well, go to the 32nd century. Are you happy now? Like, I think it almost feels like that, you know, to me when watching the show. And I, you know, this new season, I'm not sure if it's this change to a different tone. I think part of that is it's not, you know, COVID isn't as oppressive as it was. But I think part of that is people were like, it's always these ridiculous galactic stakes and so heavy and saving the galaxy, and they're like, well, maybe we'll do something a little different this time.
Yeah, they wanted to change it up, which I appreciate.
But they're listening.
We needed it. They're listening, and also it's like trying to figure out what to listen to and what not to is the challenge, right? Obviously, but they seem to be taking the biggest, most important lessons that they should be getting.
They're not listening to the trolls. They didn't, you know, get rid of
all the people who weren't white.
I mean, it would just be funny if, like, that just the opening shot of the season and like everyone on the bridge is a white male, you know,
is a straight white man who never talks about how he's feeling.
And they just did a whole like an alternate universe, like they did an episode. I mean, that would be trolling on their part if they like, if it was like they went to a universe where that was the Discovery, you know, and they had to like deal with this alternate Discovery where it's all. But then they all fall in love
with each other.
Okay.
Okay, we've written season 6. So, yeah, no, I'm glad they don't listen to that stuff, because there's a lot of, you know, you and I have had plenty of issues with Discovery's type of storytelling at certain times, but the stuff I see out there, and you see it too, is nuts.
Yeah.
People who are just mad about diversity and mad about other things versus making legitimate critiques. And he said something in that interview, which I totally agree with, which is that there would be no modern age of Star Trek without Discovery. Like, he's right.
Yeah.
Like, it opened the door to everything. So if you love Strange New Worlds or Star Trek Picard Season 3 or Lower Decks, like, you would not have any of that without Discovery.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to like Discovery. Like, some people just don't like it because they don't like it. And that is legit. We all have things we don't like.
As Sonique called it, the mothership of the Latinum age of Star Trek is what she called this new era of Star Trek.
I love that. Good for her.
Yeah.
All right. I want us to play my favorite of all of Joe's interviews next, because they're all fun, but his interview with Wilson Cruz was extra bonus fun. So listen to it.
So after going through so much, including death, Culber seems super chill in season 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you see an arc for him in season 5, or has he achieved ultimate Culberness?
You know, I think at the end of season 5, he has achieved ultimate Culberness. David and Jawas. because I think his whole journey has been about owning the life that he deserves, right? And I think when we see him at the beginning of this season, he's getting there. Like, you see that he's in a different place. He's ready for whatever comes at him. But a big existential question does come to him during the season. And I think it's the final key to his anxiety, to his view of how he fits into the world. And I can talk about that later on in the season, I guess. But yes, okay. I think at the end of the season, he really is completely in his skin. In a way that he's never been, even before he died.
Even before he died.
Yeah.
A lot of season 4 was dedicated to Culber counseling book.
Yeah.
Okay. Who in season 5 needs the good doctor the most?
What's
that? Thank you.
It's just a hair, random hair. Well, I think my husband does need me a little bit because he's going through a bit of a crisis, but he handles it. I think everybody needs me, which is part of Culber's anxiety. But, you know, I do end up spending a lot of time with Book this season in a friendship way. Like, we develop a real friendship that's beyond our therapist and, you know, counselor and patient, if you will. Like, to the point where we actually see him counseling me a bit this season. So it's great. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're awesome. Nerdy question. Who's the chief medical officer of Star Trek of Discovery?
Trick question. You know, I think at this point I could probably own the fact that I am the chief medical officer.
Yes.
But, you know, nobody has actually said that yet. Also, like, you know, the fact that there was some controversy over whether Paul and Hugh were actually married or not.
Oh.
Which we were kind of confused about as well, but Michelle said, "You're definitely married." So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb whether these fuckers want to support me in it or not. I am the head motherfucker in charge.
So in season 5...
What are they going to do, fire me now?
You know? Oh, right. Well, will we see Culber again?
Oh, we will. I mean, I think we will at some point. You know, they know that. They know that.
Yeah.
How do you not bring me back? I'm just kidding.
It's the Academy show. That's what...
I will not. I have no comment.
Yeah. So there's a 24th century Romulan ship in the new season.
Yeah.
Did you do any research to bone up on some of the canon connections?
Yes.
And what did you watch? What did you?
If I told you that, oh, I would be spoiling so much for you. But yes, I did the appropriate research.
Okay.
For how this season is connected to Star Trek lore. I'll say that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So, I mean, I don't know if this is nitpicky of us, this, like, who's the chief medical officer thing.
It's not nitpicky.
Wilson seemed to get the question. He called it a trick question, which is funny, I thought.
Yes.
Because it's just weird. name a Star Trek show and you could name the chief medical officer, the chief engineer. It's obvious. It's clear. It's not like this is one of the things that Discovery just it wasn't important to the showrunners, obviously, because they, you know, they spent five seasons apparently without ever bothering.
Right. Like was it in season one where they would sometimes mention the chief medical officer?
I forget. Probably.
I remember. Like early on, one or two, they would sometimes say like, well, the CMO wants this. The chief medical officer wants this. But then like Culber was the person they went to when they needed the senior medical authority on the ship.
Yeah.
So I like that. I mean, I liked what he said about being married, too, because the married thing was confusing. Also, are they married? Are they not married? I mean, it doesn't matter, but they seem to be married.
Yeah. I think they were married in one of the comic books, but does that count?
But they are married.
They are married.
Yeah. She said you're married. Yeah.
So, no, that was a fun. I'm not sure if I would take anything of when he said, like, no comment or whatever, when he asked him about the Academy show, but maybe. Maybe that wasn't. Was that a hint? Or am I reading into it?
It's so hard to know because it could have. They're all so careful and terrified, you know, about saying something that they shouldn't.
And they're still writing that show.
They're afraid to say anything, but there must be discussions going on.
Maybe, maybe.
And it would make sense to bring people in for, you know, even just cameos and things.
If they needed someone as a series regular, Dr. Culber has a position at the Academy, then he would know because they need him for 10 episodes. But if he's just in for one episode, they may not have even told him that yet.
No, and the thing is, if you have Stamets or Culber, you need both of them unless they broke up.
Which, you know, doesn't sound like that because he gets to ultimate Culberness by the end of the season. That's not going to happen without his space husband.
No, they have to stay together. Yeah. I love them.
And now it's time for everyone to get the audible hug of Doug Jones.
I was told that you give the best hugs.
Come here right now.
Thank you. And it did mine too. That's what I was told.
Okay, good.
Yeah, thank you. So as far as season five goes, the trailers show that Saru getting into the action, right? Mm-hmm. Was this a new challenge for you, especially in all the makeup? Or is that the stunt guy's problem?
My stunt guy is, I want to give him full credit for all that he did for me over all the five seasons, as well as Shape of Water and What We Do in the Shadows. He's been my guy in Toronto.
Great, okay.
When you find a tall, skinny stunt actor who can take a hit and live through it, you keep him. And Boston saved my life. So he did the lion's share of outdoors, uneven terrain, running. That was him. But I still had to do an awful lot out in the forest as well. And it was, you know, when you're wearing heavy makeup with prosthetics, it is what it is, no matter what environment you're in. But it just like it would just be the treacherous terrain, just even trying to walk. It's hard enough on a flat floor, let alone in a forest. Yeah.
We can see this season will also be emotional for Saru.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've seen so far is Saru conveying a lot of his feelings. So were there any changes in the makeup that would allow for more facial expression?
Not necessarily, except that the silicone material that my prosthetics are made out of, I found out they accidentally ran it softer than the usual one time, and I said, oh my gosh, this is so much better. They can run it hard like a truck tire, or they can run it soft like you know, a breast implant sort of. I can run the whole range. So the softer, like more pliable, is like I asked them to keep it that way from now on. But we didn't discover that until season five. So
well, so better late than
it
ever.
It does move better now. It does express better now with
that's
me.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about the new season that was a big leap for you or new territory for you?
Well, the growing romance. It's rare to be a non-human character in a wacky makeup and have a romance story as well. It's happened a couple of times, Shape of Water being one of them. But also this, having a love interest with President Tarina, my lovely Vulcan lady friend. And it was a very dignified, subtle relationship that has now, in season five, it builds and builds to a lovely crescendo.
I think
you're going to like it.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Other than the cast and crew members, what will you miss most about Discovery and being Saru?
Yeah, of course. wow, I've gotten to, Saru has become like a dear friend to me. We've gotten to know each other so well. He's affected me. I've affected him, I think, in a way. It's hard to talk about him in third person when I'm the guy playing him.
Right.
But yeah. I kind of feel that way. And I've learned some life lessons from him about fear, anxiety, and getting over it and through it successfully. Yeah. I'll miss that.
Yeah, that seems like a lot. Can we expect to see Saru in the future? The Academy show, anything else?
I would say never say never. I'm open to it, but I've heard nothing so far. No one's called me yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, hopefully they will.
Your lips to God's ears. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I noticed from watching some of season five, he seemed to dismiss it, but I think I could tell that the makeup's a little different because he seems to be able to emote more with his face.
I would agree.
It's just more fluid and natural and less like a mask and more like a skin.
Mm-hmm.
And as he said, it's unfortunate that they just figured out how to do that. A little late. But sure, why not, you know?
Yeah.
But this is maybe the more important season because now he's got a girlfriend.
Right.
As he mentioned, the whole romance angle is...
No, and if they're going to kiss, we're going to have to see how that works with his big weird head. So
a lot of stooping over for that too because he's quite a bit taller than she is, especially in the hooves.
He's a bit taller than everybody, and then you add those crazy saroots. Yeah. So...
I do feel for his stunt double, but there's a lot of action and it sounds like he is doing some of it, but just not the not the running and that stuff.
Right. In those crazy boots.
I guess we're going to finish with Blue. That's all we got, right?
Yep.
Okay. So much of Adira was defined by their relationship with Gray in season four.
Yeah.
Did you see season five as a chance to define who Adira is on their own and the role on the ship?
I think so. I think definitely season five is probably the first time that we can see Adira have a little bit more agency in their own life and what they want to do and their position on this ship. I think they do sort of get a little bit more introspective and start asking themselves, what do they want? Why do they want it? What makes them feel good and what doesn't? Because they are someone who's fairly anxious a lot of the time and is a perfectionist and you know, very type A. So, yeah, I think that's very, very correct to say.
I was going to ask if you can give us insight into Adira's new place on the ship and their arc for the season. I don't know if you kind of alluded to that just now, but is there anything else you can tell us?
I can say that there's multiple. I think, like, they are... They stayed very much in the lab for the most of, you know, season three, season four. They get to do a lot more in season five. I think they're given a lot more responsibility on the ship and as a crew member. So they get to do a lot of new stuff.
Do you get to hear about their history, like where they're from, a little bit more from Earth, or the 32nd century?
I don't want to spoil anything. Okay. I don't think I can spoil anything.
Okay. Oh. No, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned, you know, you spend a lot of time in lab, science, and engineering, and you work with TIG a lot. Can you tell us anything about any anecdotes or anything from the set?
I love TIG with every fiber of my being. I want to be like TIG. I want TIG to be my parent. I think that TIG is the greatest person on Earth. And I also hope that she loves me back. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned parent.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you about your space dads.
Yes.
Anything you can tell us about the relationship in season five with your space
dads? Yeah. I think that really continues to grow quite beautifully in season five. I think, like I said earlier, they have, you know, have a little more agency this season, and I think they also are just a lot more confident in themselves and confident in that they are really wanted on this ship and they are really wanted by, you know, these two men who have sort of taken them in and love them and become these father figures. And I think they're starting to believe that, you know, they're supposed to be here and this is where they're meant to be at.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Are you hoping to cross over into the animation?
Oh my god, of course. Yeah. Of course.
Have
I think like
anything about it or
if it, no, I know literally okay. Okay. Truly actually like hand to heart nothing.
Okay.
But of course I mean this has been the most insane journey, and I obviously want it to continue for them in any way possible.
Yes.
Even if it's here and there, but I love Adira so much and I feel very attached to them, and if they can have a life anywhere else, I hope that they do. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
So I loved Adira from the minute they showed up.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy that we're getting out from under that sort of burdensome relationship. It was just sort of in the way of things happening. So
I mean, any character that's overly defined by their relationship, and that happens on a lot of shows where they just end up sucked into that. I mean, like, look at Raffi in season 2 of Picard, just went down a rabbit hole of whining about Seven all the time, you know, and
yeah.
It ruined the character. And luckily they brought her back in season 3 where they're like, nope, you are a spy again.
Right. I mean, that I was sort of like, they never really talked about it, so that was kind of weird.
Yeah, but they did a hard pivot on that one. But they, you know, the point is, and this is not just Star Trek, like lots of shows, kind of characters end up to be just too much about their relationships. In a way, Culber started out that way as well. You know, it was just basically Stamets's husband.
Yeah.
And then soon enough, they moved him well past that, though.
So I'm glad they're doing that with Adira. I think Blue is a strong actor.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to see them get more to do.
Yeah. And more with Tig Notaro, who Blue mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. Talked about working with Tig and how great it was.
So that's it for our red carpet. We're going to have yet more interviews in a couple weeks. Lori and I interviewing various members of the cast at the official junket, which is a different event.
All you need to know about that is that there's a moment when David Ajala says, "Hi, Lori." And I just really like, I mean, because I'm Lori from Trek Movie. Hi, Lori. And I'm just like, hi.
And then you completely forgot to ask the question.
No, I was totally good. I didn't swoon. I didn't sigh. And he's with Doug Jones, who I love. But it was just, I just really like that guy.
The other thing is that Lori and I have seen the first 4 episodes, and you've probably seen around the web, including TrekMovie.com, these early reviews, spoiler-free. The one that I wrote was really co-written. Lori was heavily involved in that. You and I think, kind of agree.
I know, and we don't always. We often have different, when we look at episodes of any of these shows, your favorite will be one I didn't like, my favorite will be one you didn't like.
Yeah.
But this one, I think if we were ranking the episodes, we'd probably put them in almost the same order.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's 4, 1, 2, 3, and you, I think, is 4.
I would maybe do 4, 2, 1, 3, but 2 and 1 are in the same ballpark,
right?
But they're off to a good start.
Yeah,
I mean, we're going to do full reviews of each episode as we always do. We had to watch all 4 because we were doing the interviews. Otherwise, we would have waited, as we like to do with our reviews, and not get ahead. But I think it does have what they said it's going to have, which is a different pace and a different tone. And they seem, this was a word you used in your review that I really liked, confident.
I think the reduction of 13 to 10 episodes helps, keeps things tighter. It does feel like, even though they keep on saying, and I believe them, that they knew it wasn't the final season, but they even imply that they had no inkling it could be, but they still approached it, at least written, like there's just this finality to it. I don't know why, because we've only seen...
It's there. It's 100% there that you feel like we're tying up loose ends, we're wrapping things up, we're looking, characters are looking back at everything that they've done and how it's changed them
and their legacies. And certainly when you watch the trailer, they make it seem like it was obvious, you know.
Right.
You know, so I don't know, I enjoyed it, really loved episode 4.
I was just gonna say 4 is just such a treat. Like, it's just really well done. I don't want to tell people anything about it, except that it's a wild ride and does very well for them but for anybody, combine like the weight and the emotion of what's going on with the action.
And Rainer is a fantastic character. He's obviously not a Vulcan from the first time you see him. It's not just the ears. I mean, there's just, but he's not even a Romulan. Like he's his own thing. I started thinking like, I don't know if they meant it this way, but it felt like they're like, let's bring back a little Lorca energy into the show.
Well, it's also like a little Todd Stashwick energy too. Like it's just, there's a certain, it's just a character who is going to be blunt with people. And is seeing everything so strongly through their lens of their point of view. Yeah, he's great. You're going to want every single character to have scenes with him.
Yeah, and he's a series regular. He's a major part of the show.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, there's also these new bad guys who kind of flit in and out, and they're interesting. We don't know enough about them yet, but who's the head of the Emerald Chain, wherever she was, couldn't stand her.
Osira.
You know, I mean, they're definitely more interesting than Osira and
okay, well, that's not Control, a big challenge.
If you remember Control and Leland, yeah. You know, which I think has been a criticism of the show is it hasn't done adversaries well. And these are different kinds of adversaries because they don't control an empire. They're just these two people who are after the big thing because this is a treasure hunt and they're after the treasure and they're smart and
And they're not, there's no reason for them to be mustache twirling. So they're not mustache twirling because that's not who they are. They're not plotting an elaborate thing. They're just part of the story. Yeah.
They don't seem evil. They're just, you know, out for themselves. Yeah.
And I just think Sinique was killing it. Like she's so good. I always think that, but I think she gives a great performance in everybody. I think you'll feel very rewarded that we get to see everybody stepping up, having moments, having their own mini stories within stories.
And if you are a fan of the show, you're going to love it because it's got everything.
Yeah.
It's got all the stuff you like. The plot's there, but there's tons of character moments. They're trying to give everyone character. I mean, not the bridge crew. The bridge crew are just always going to be not glorified extras, but they are not full realized characters. They are just kind of there. And it's hard for some Star Trek fans to not get to better know the bridge crew because the bridge crew has always been so important, but that's not what this show is. They are, you know, but, and there's a new one. They threw in a new one. I can't remember her name, but
she's, yeah, but she's new. Yep. She's right up there. Like when they have a moment where you get to see something from everybody, she's included in the group.
So they've done lots of little fixes and big fixes, but there's still some things that are, you know, are still a problem, you know?
Yes. They have habits, right. Let's just say, that I find frustrating as a viewer.
Yeah. Some things like some things may bother me more than you. Like I'm not as bothered by the magical 32nd century technology as you are. I've just gotten used to it. I kind of like it sometimes, actually.
Well, it looks, I think visually it looks cool, but sometimes I just think they don't think through like it's hard when you can do everything. Right. It's like even if you go back to it's like the problem of the transporter. The transporter can do all these great things. And so throughout the history of Star Trek, they always have to make up reasons why it doesn't work when they need it to not work. And so I feel like with this super advanced futuristic technology, they don't even think I don't feel like there are reasons for anything. I feel like some things can do this and some things can do that. And it's just it feels very random and magical to me.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it's reading their minds, which it was doing last season, too. Like they don't if you don't have to give a command to something, how does it know? How does it know when you do this with your hand, what file you wanted? Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't seem to need much direction. And I'm wondering if it's interacting with their brains.
It has to be, you know, because there's like a moment every once in a while I laugh at it because there was like Saru was walking through Starfleet Academy and he was on like the third floor and he just pops up to the fourth floor. And it's like, how did it know he wanted to do that?
If you don't tell it, or is that it was had Starfleet HQ, not the Academy.
Right.
But
sorry.
Like it was that a specific like one location to one location only transporter?
Like, yeah. Do you stand at a certain point and it takes you upstairs or.
And that's all it does?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean. These are the things that it's kind of like the chief medical officer. Like we're used to having these little details that the show doesn't care about.
Well, and the bigger issue with the transporters from, and this happened last season too, was that like someone will, you know, get asked to come to the bridge and they'll beam in. And I'm like, if you stopped walking from one location to the other, like in your house, let's say you're in your house and you need to go upstairs and you never take the stairs and you never walk around, everybody would be like 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Like you have to move your body. And so there's something to be said for walking down the corridor and getting in the turbo lift. And you could page someone to the bridge and have them show up in, you know, 30 seconds instead of two.
But I mean, this is in the long, I think the bigger issue that I think we both agree on perhaps is the sidebar, the feelings sidebars. And it doesn't bother me as much as just when they put them in the episode.
Right. I want the sidebars. Like, I have always loved a lot of the emotional stuff in Discovery. You give me like a good Tilly Michael emotional scene, I am there for it 100%. But if they're, let's say, and I'm making this up because there isn't a scene that I've seen with the two of them rushing off to do something. But if they're like running and they go, we have 15 seconds. And then halfway through, they stop and have a big emotional conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go, just keep going. You don't have to stop. Just go and still have the conversation. It's called a walk and talk.
Exactly.
But all of that aside, we're both enjoying the episodes and they're fun and good and full of good stuff. And they look great.
Yeah, I highly recommend, especially for fans, to rewatch the season finale because it was 2 years ago. So you're going to – and it gets you into the brain set, the mindset of Discovery again. But also you need to remember, like, who is, where are they, what are the political factions and
right,
and who's physically where, oh, and what's going on, because there's a bit of business in the first episode of moving these chess pieces around from where they ended in season four. So it's a good idea to kind of remind yourself of where's Book and where's Tilly and where's yada yada. So,
and remembering the bigger story, like that politics plays a part in everything.
Yeah.
So all of that is definitely useful to refresh yourself on.
Especially because, you know, we've done a good amount of 24th, 25th century stuff recently, and this is a whole different ballgame. You know, it's a whole different century.
Yeah. The other thing we want to add is that even just in the first four, they go to places.
Oh, that's
they
right.
Go to planets.
They are strange worlds. There's different locations, yes, for sure. Three out of four episodes have a strange world, or ones we've been before, but it's still strange, and it's a part we haven't seen before. And the other two are totally new, right?
Yeah,
they were totally new, I think.
Yep.
Hopefully, that trend continues through the season.
I think it will. I think that's part of the story, is that because we know, this isn't a spoiler, we know there's a thing and they're trying to find out pieces of this mystery that are in different places. So they're going to have to go to different places, I assume, in each episode to get whatever piece they need.
They've overtly structured this like Indiana Jones. So it, just like that, you need to go around to the equivalent of Space Cairo and Space Timbuktu and, you know, and all that kind of stuff to find all the clues.
To find the space clues. The
space clues, exactly. So it's definitely good stuff. And I think that's it for the episode, our kind of Discovery primer. Anything else? We're going to skip bits this week because we had so much stuff to go over.
Yeah, there's so much stuff. And we, you know, big thanks to Joe for doing all those great interviews. He did such a nice job.
Yeah, we were hoping to have him here, but he's busy at with his kids, so
some sort of Peppa Pig related event.
Yeah. Not Star Trek at
so
all.
So cute. Well, he can, you know, he'll get them hooked on Prodigy soon enough.
Indeed. Well, thank you for listening.
And we'll see you next week.